You're listening to Idaho Matters. I'm Gemma Gaudette. Five Idaho charter schools have been awarded $800,000 each in federal funding. The goal of the funding is to increase the number of new, high-quality charter school seats for Idaho students who need them the most. Now, this funding comes from a $17 million U.S. Department of Education grant that was awarded last year to Idaho's Community of Excellence Consortium. Joining me live in studio to talk more are Terry Ryan. He is CEO of Bloom. This is a nonprofit committed to Idaho children's access to education. And Keith Donahue, Executive Director of Sage International School. Welcome to the program.
It's great to be here. Thank you.
So first, just very quickly, give an overview of charter schools if for some reason people still are confused by what a charter school is, Terry.
So charter schools are public schools, and they are open to anyone who applies. A lot of the charter schools in this state, though, have wait lists, so there are lotteries to get in. And charter schools serve all public school students. And we have a real wide range of them in this state, from what you'd call classical academies, where the students may wear uniforms, to STEM schools, like you're going to hear from Keith will talk to you about IB schools. So we have a wide range of charter schools, but they're public schools available to all students. And in this state, they're pretty high performing overall.
And Keith, you are ahead of Sage International School, and Sage is a charter school for people that may not be aware. So talk to me about how the funding works, because this is a different piece of the puzzle than your traditional public school.
Correct. Yes. So we are part of the public school system. So from a state funding perspective, we receive a comparable or the same amount per child as a traditional public school. The big funding difference is we do not participate in or receive any local funding. So if there's a levy and the property tax, all revenues from that do not flow to charter schools. So we operate with just our state funding. And that's why it's so important to get extra support from this federal grant or the Albertson Foundation to help us buy a building and do those things that we are not able to do because we do receive just the state funding.
And, you know, you hear arguments with charter schools that, you know what, though, there's not access for every child because some charter schools don't have busing. It's almost like a private school without having to pay for it, to be the devil's advocate here. So then, Terry, when there's federal funding that is specific to the children most in need to have that access, talk to me about that, even the idea of a rural charter school.
Right. So what we're able to do now with the federal grant dollars and also the support of, like Keith mentioned, the Albertsons Family Foundation, are to make sure that the schools have what they need to serve all kids well. So things like busing, things like a kitchen in the building, food service capacities. So what has happened in this state, charters have been happening in this state for 21 years now. And the first generation of charters, as I describe it, were really kind of middle-class families who were frustrated or just had a big idea and wanted to do a school. In the last, say, 5 to 6 years, there's been a more emphasis on actually trying to serve all students and to make sure that these schools are not only open for all students, but actually attractive to and able to serve. And so that's where upfront investments in things like transportation, things like your facilities, being able to deal with the complexities of title. One other thing is that federal dollars also flow to charter schools. And so a lot of the dollars for they're called title dollars for at-risk students and high poverty students. Those dollars will also flow with students. So what the federal grant that we have, the $17 million, enables is actually kind of the pumping of the prime to get these schools to a level where they start, where they're able to serve all kids and able to serve them well.
So talk to me about the charter schools that receive this money, because there are five of them. I believe two in Meridian.
Yes, there's two.
One in Garden City.
Two in Meridian, one in Garden City, one in Ammon, and one in Middleton, which is Keith's.
Right, because that's kind of the next extension of because Sage is close to downtown Boise, so you are opening a new iteration in a more rural area.
Correct, yes. And so, yes, so we're opening Forge International in Middleton. It will open as a K-5 and grow to a K-12. So what's been very rewarding for us is we're a perfect example. When we opened Sage here 10 years ago, we didn't have any busing. We didn't have a school nurse. We didn't have a counselor. Those things came in year 5, 6, 7. With this support and with the targeting that's going on and opening a second school with intent, we will have all of those things year one.
So talk to me, too, about Middleton specifically. Why Middleton? Because I think, again, when we think of charter schools, you tend to think of larger areas.
Correct. And that's part of what myself and our board were excited about, is we wanted to try to figure out how do we reach and serve not only lower income or minority, but rural Idaho, where there often is no school choice. You have one choice. So we've selected, you know, our strategy was, and with Middleton, is we wanted to be on the edge of the Treasure Valley. So we still did have a population center with enough students there mm-hmm. to make potential the state feel like you're going to get enough kids. Our attendance boundary reaches down into Caldwell, downtown Caldwell, covers Middleton, and actually extends out into seven different rural school districts to the north, east, and west, mm-hmm. so that we can actually impact multiple communities. While we're located in Middleton, our attendance zone serves multiple communities throughout the area. So,
and you were just saying you were going to get students from Emmett. You were saying 35 families or something.
Yep, Emmett, New Plymouth, Caldwell, mm-hmm. Parma. You know, if you take a look at our attendance zone, it covers a huge. So that was kind of our strategy. How do we reach as many rural communities where there's no choice as possible to offer the choice we bring? And Middleton was just and Middleton itself is going to grow so much over the next right. few years. If you look at the projections, we could kind of show up there, serve the number of kids we're going to serve without overpowering mm-hmm. the area, and while reaching several communities.
I'm speaking with Terry Ryan. He is the CEO of Bloom. It is a nonprofit committed to Idaho's children's access to education, as well as Keith Donahue, Executive Director of Sage International School. And what's interesting, Keith, when you just made the statement that it will also, Forge International in Middleton will reach seven more rural areas, you have to have busing or you cannot have access no matter what.
Correct. So we will, our model for year one, we have enough busing capacity for up to 85% of students if they would like it. And then we'll grow our, you know, we'll add a route the second year as we grow.
Mm-hmm.
So correct. In order to do that and serve those kids, we had to provide that option. We'll have the free lunch. We're kind of, that's what's fun is you get to, with the second school and the support, you get to do this with intent to serve these communities, which we couldn't do before.
And the federal grant allows you to actually purchase buses. It actually allows
so that's part
some of the
of
money
it.
To be spent on busing, yeah.
Because that would make sense then, Terry, because if you are looking at who is most in need, and if we need more choice in rural areas or children that don't have access to things like this, you can try to get them to come to the school or give them a place. They can't get there, though, if there's not a bus.
That's correct. And this, and I may veer off and you can stop me, but
okay.
I'm actually going to visit Island Park next week. Island Park is a small community close to Yellowstone.
Oh, yeah. It's small.
Right.
It's on the border
so
if people don't know where it is.
The superintendent of the school district there, this is what I've heard, and I'm going to have to go and see. The kids take a bus down to Ashton, and so that's about 45 minutes each way. And the community in Island Park is saying, we'd like to keep our babies, our K-3s, our little ones here. The superintendent, as I understand, is very supportive of this. So how can we help them try to design a school that would be a K-3 one-room schoolhouse but provide high-quality education to those kids? And Keith and I were talking before we came in here. I mean, this is the challenge in rural is scale. You don't have it, but you have opportunities and you have needs. Now, we're talking remote, not just rural in this instance. But
right.
How do we help a community like that that really wants to have the ownership for the education of their children? They have a good educator in the community. How do you make the economics of that work? And those are the kinds of questions that we struggle with. But certainly federal grant dollars and philanthropic support can make a huge mm-hmm. difference.
And part of this is you're looking at adding almost 3,000 student seats with this in all five of these charter schools.
All together, it's about 2,800 seats that we're expecting to create, yes.
And so with that, you have the buses, you have the students. What else will this particular federal grant be able to do for these schools?
So you know, specific examples for us are we're going to have a nurse year one. You know, which we couldn't do, which again supports the community we're trying to serve, having mm-hmm. that nurse assistance there, having a solid special ed program and special ed teachers on board from year one to get started, English language learner support and teachers. So it's kind of those things you, or in a counselor, it's kind of those things you could do opening a school year one and grow into over mm-hmm. time, but the right way to do it is to have it out of the gate. So those are all examples of things in a functioning, qualifying federal mm-hmm. reduced lunch program, kitchen, and staff. We'll be able to do all those things from the start so that while we're trying to attract the families that aren't often offered choice or are underserved, we can actually serve them well.
And it's really important in year one because what happens oftentimes in a charter school is once the enrollment of the first year takes place, you then are in a situation where you're having wait lists. And so you're not able to serve all families at that point because all the families that you already have are in effect in your pipeline and in the system. Mm-hmm. And so if you want to serve more needier students, but you've already got full enrollment, there's no way of giving them an extra ball in the lottery or anything like that. That could be another conversation. But the challenge that you face is that you've got families that want to go into the school, but they're not ever able to actually get their first child in the door that might give them preference for that school. So this is the challenge. This is why we're trying to grow these schools in the communities that need them most and to serve the neediest kids. And that's the pipeline then where the mm-hmm. families come from.
And ultimately, I mean, why school choice? You know, there are arguments to be made that, well, we have a public school system that works. Why school choice?
I mean, for me, what I find most valuable in it is we live in the Boise District, our first school here, Sage. It's a great district, very high performing, great schools. But maybe certain families would like international baccalaureate education, which is not offered in the Boise District. So not every style of education, even if it's great, fits every child. So I think choice is good. I think parents like choice. We have many families where one child goes to our school, two don't. Mm-hmm. We're the right fit for a child who needs what we offer. So it's a choice. I see benefit of choice within the public school system. It's not to me the public school system's inadequate or not doing a good job. It's another option for families and the right option for some kids.
It's an appreciation that kids learn differently. Not all kids learn the same way. Full disclosure, both of my daughters went to Sage. And when I moved out here 6 years ago, we had to make a decision as to where we wanted to send our children to school. And we chose Sage because we believed that the academic model made good sense for mm-hmm. our kids. My wife is Polish from Poland. I've spent a lot of time overseas. The idea of an international program made a whole lot of sense. But that's not the case for all families and right. for all kids. And there are a lot of my children's friends who went to Boise Senior High, loved it, thrived. But it's just a recognition that not all families are the same and not all children in a family are the same, and that we need to give options to families and to kids that work best for them.
I want to thank both of you for coming in today and talking about this. My guest today, Terry Ryan, CEO of Bloom, a nonprofit that is committed to Idaho children's access to education, as well as Keith Donahue, Executive Director of Sage International School. Thank you so much for the conversation.
Thank you.
I'm Gemma Gaudet. You're listening to Idaho Matters.